my little friend.
It's time to get in the zone.
In the zone.
Oh, my God. The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending, exciting, thrilling finish in the history of college football.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
The Zone is sponsored by Helena Agro Enterprises, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture.
Swung on, that's a deep center field. Bernie Williams goes back.
It's Friday. It's the Fieldhouse, and you're in the zone. Here are your hosts, George Takata.
You talking to me?
And Nick Anderson.
You talking to me?
It's time to get in the zone.
What are you worried about? I'm in the zone, man.
All right, everybody. Happy Friday, and thanks for getting your weekend started with me. George Takata live at the Fieldhouse on Copper in Fresno. We are in the zone. We got one hell of a great show for you today. We've got two former Bulldogs on today. Marcus Riley, former Fresno State linebacker, joins me about 4:15. Coach Q at 4:45 to preview the big Fresno State-Nevada matchup tomorrow at the Mart, the doghouse, if you will. Well, Bulldog Stadium's the doghouse. We'll call the State Mart Center the center. I'll call it the center. Oh, it's a big game. Hopefully it'll be about 10, 12,000. Well, hopefully it's sold out. Hopefully we get 10, 12,000 tomorrow night at the Mart. Former Bulldog quarterback Billy Volek, who bleeds Charger blue and gold still, will join me around 5 o'clock. Can't wait to speak to him. Talk about the Chargers, their big playoff matchup at New England. It's always great to catch up with Billy, see what he's up to. Still is in the San Diego area. And then Mike Osegate, Mike Oz, Yahoo Sports, who does a great job covering Major League Baseball for Yahoo Sports. He will join me about 5:30. So four great guests, lots to talk about. You know, Bulldog basketball, just tremendous. Their great season continues at 12-3. And you know, it's the same thing that we talk about with filling up Bulldog Stadium when the teams are doing well, right? You want to see a full stadium, a full arena, for these student-athletes. Do I think the Save Mart Center will sell out tomorrow? No, I don't. I wish I didn't think that way. But could there be 10, 12,000 people? Yeah. I mean, there should be. I mean, you got a 12-3 basketball team. It's about ready to crack top 25, especially if they win on Saturday. They win tomorrow. They'll be in the top 25 at the beginning of the week next week. And let the good times roll. Feeding off of football, finished with the top 20 ranking in the polls. Men's basketball is following suit. I mean, it's just, we're getting back to where football and men's basketball at Fresno State are both doing exceptionally well. Justin Hudson and his staff, tremendous job retooling things, bringing, I guess, a more exciting brand of basketball. A lot of people were saying that to the Save Mart Center to Fresno State. And really, you know, we preach attendance. We preach in-person support for the student-athletes, for these young men and women, especially when they're 12-3, especially when they're 12-2, like the football team finished. The support should be there, and we hope it's there tomorrow because, let's face it, that game against Colorado State, Fresno State hosted, wasn't very well attended. And we talk, it's like beating a dead horse at this point. People go, support, in person. You're spoiled because it's on TV. It's too cold outside, yada, 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 whatever. Go out there, in person, support these Bulldogs. And we'll talk more about that with Coach Q. And we'll dig through the X's and O's with him as well. And talk about the keys to a win over a top 10 opponent. Can you imagine Fresno State beating a top 10 opponent under a first-year head coach? That'd be an incredible accomplishment. Incredible accomplishment. I don't know, and I'll ask Coach Q, I don't know if this would be a first win against a top 10 opponent in men's basketball for Fresno State. I don't know if this, if they do this tomorrow, I don't know if this will be the first time it's happened. So we'll ask Coach Q about that. But I'm telling you, it hasn't happened a lot. There haven't been many opportunities like this. You know, UNLV come rolling around in here at Zelland Arena, number one team in the nation, with Tark's teams coming in here. And there'd always be, oh, he's packed. He'd be packed for Tark. Whether he's a running rebel or a bulldog. I mean, it was always packed for Tark. And there is a case to be made about Zelland Arena and how loud it was and how much fun it was when the Tark meter was going off and sellout crowds. If we could just bring that energy and atmosphere back tomorrow night for these kids, that would be just tremendous. This is where you wish you could just condense the Save Mart Center to like 10,333 or whatever the attendance, the capacity was at Zelland Arena, and shrink it down to that and create an unbelievably loud atmosphere. I mean, aside from concerts with big-name performers coming in, you could say the Save Mart Center is a little too big for Fresno State basketball right now. It's definitely too big for volleyball, and they cut the thing in half for volleyball games. But I remember a Stanford game when the Lopez twins came to Save Mart Center. Pretty much, well, almost sold out, but I've never seen it sold out for basketball. And it's too big for basketball. The arena is too big for hoops, period. But maybe, just maybe, tomorrow night will be the time when it's on national TV and you'll be able to see a sea of red. Not the seats, but people wearing red in those stands. So there you go. Fresno State hosting number 10 Nevada. I know they stubbed their toe big time at New Mexico. But they're still a top 10 basketball team. Coach Musselman, incredible job. And so it's up to you as the fans. Hey, it's a 5 o'clock game. It's not 7 p.m. It's 5 o'clock. You go eat at Doghouse. Come eat here at the field house before the game, and then go. Field house has a great atmosphere. Come here, get your drink on, get your food on, and then drive on over to the Mart for what will be a very, very competitive men's basketball game. So there you go. This is Soapbox. Support your Bulldogs in person. Can't say it enough. You really can't. And so we'll talk to Coach Q about that. Marcus Riley will join us first, and he's going to be the subject of our Where Are They Now? So he's back up in the Sacramento area, so we'll talk to him about what he's doing with his life now and, you know, life after football. And we'll talk about how he had to be the enemy. That Hawaii Bowl when he was an assistant coach for SMU, and they, Marcus Hunt terrorized Derek Carr all game long. Derek Carr got hit harder than I've ever seen. That SMU game in Hawaii was the hardest I've ever seen Derek Carr get hit. He took a pummel. There was one hit he had where he was eating his chin strap, and that was on a hit by Marcus Hunt. And that was Marcus Riley, who was an assistant coach for that team. And we'll talk to him about the hit that people still talk about that he made on Colt Brennan at Hawaii. Lots going on with Marcus Riley in Hawaii, whether as a Bulldog or a member of the SMU Mustangs. So can't wait to talk to him about those things. Well, he's all Bulldog born, Bulldog bred, no doubt about it. Behind the scenes, he did tell me after that Hawaii Bowl, that was tough. Happy to get the win, but tough to say that it had to happen against Derek Carr and the Bulldogs. So can't wait to speak to him. When it comes to Billy Bolek, he, of course, engineered a great game-winning drive in the playoffs for the San Diego Chargers against the Colts. Peyton Manning. They won the game. And we will recharge the batteries with Billy. I haven't talked to him in a while. And he's going to break down all the playoff games for us, especially this Chargers-Patriots matchup and what it's going to take for them to go there and beat Tom Brady. Not an easy task at all. I don't care if Tom Brady's 51 years old. It wouldn't be easy. He's 41 and still incredible. And I was on the fence about calling him the greatest of all time before he's the greatest of all time, Tom Brady. So the Chargers have to go play the greatest quarterback of all time and his teammates in Foxborough. This is it. The Elite Eight of the NFL is just great football. It really, Cowboys-Rams? Are you kidding me? This is a city divided this week. Rams fans, Cowboys fans, there's a ton of them in this town. They're everywhere. And so that is going to be electric. It's a battle of the two best running backs in the league. It's in L.A., America's team against the L.A. Rams, the L.A. Chargers at New England, the Saints hosting the defending world champs who took out Khalil Mack and the Bears. Thank you, Eagles, for the Raiders getting a relatively decent salvaged something. Could have been a lot worse. Chicago, I thought, was going to go a little deeper. I predicted them to beat the Eagles. It didn't happen. It's now what, the Raiders get the 24th pick. Well, I thought it would be like at 15 or 16. And so Eagles now have to go to New Orleans, and the Colts have to go to Kansas City, and I think the Chiefs are just going to womp all over Indianapolis no matter what Andrew Luck can do. He's comeback player of the year, but I would be surprised if the Colts got the job done at Kansas City, the top seed. All the 1 and 2 seeds, all 4 of them have had a week off. They've licked their wounds. They're healthy. They're ready to roll. And I know Billy's going to pull for the Chargers to win in New England. I don't know if he's going to pick them, but I do know that who he's rooting for. As of the 4 teams that take on the 1 or 2 seeds, which team has the best chance of winning on the road? We'll touch on that as well with Marcus and Billy. So we'll do that. But first things first, with the break, Marcus Riley, former Bulldog, will join us on the flip side of it. We are live from the Fieldhouse in the Zone on 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the Zone, sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, welcome back to the Zone, everybody, here at the Fieldhouse in Fresno off of Copper, one of the best sports bars in town. Come on out, get some great apps, meals, foods, great drinks, great staff's awesome. And closing at 12 midnight tonight. On this Friday, the Zone also brought to you by Reilly College, where we motivate and inspire students to succeed. Fall, spring 2019 semester begins on Monday. All the faculty has been off for a month. They come back, and they're really excited to get going again. We have Marcus Riley joining us in just a minute. Efforting him on the phone now, and he's had a little skin in the game with a couple of these teams that have been in the postseason. They're in the postseason now, so we'll see what he thinks about the Rams' chances, since he had a brief stint with them in 2008. If you'll recall, Marcus was the WAC Defensive Player of the Year in 2007. And now joining us live from Sacktown, where he lives, is one of Fresno State's finest, Marcus Riley. Hey, Marcus, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining me.
What's up? Hey, what's up, George? Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Hey, I know our Sacramento Kings got a big game tomorrow against the Hornets. You going to be a Golden One with me?
I will not be at Golden One with you. I'm having, you know, we actually got a babysitter for my new baby girl, and I got date night, you know, second date night in a few months. So we're not going to be at the Kings game, but I'll be watching skimming through when I get home on the DVR.
Well, there you go. I mean, you got to you gotta take care. You got priorities. I understand. Very
you got priorities,
very
man.
Well, I talked to a former Fresno State football player, an alum, I always bring up this season. How thrilled are you with what Jeff Tedford has done to bring this program back to prominence, and especially winning 12 games, first time ever? You know, Mountain West champs beating Boise on the blue, finally winning a bowl game. Can't really say enough about it, can you?
No, I really can't say enough, man. As soon as Fresno made that hire, I was super excited. I just knew the direction the program would be going. Now it's just kind of all coming to fruition now. You know, I knew he would, you know, recruit the Valley hard, which he's been doing, and get the guys playing to their full potential. And I think it's pretty exciting because we haven't even seen his recruits really play much yet. You know, a lot of these older guys were brought in by DeRudy and that staff, but to watch and see how his recruiting and the kids that we get throughout these next couple years will be exciting to watch.
Now, as a former linebacker, I'm sure you pay close attention to Jeff Allison. How impressed are you of Jeff and his career at Fresno State? He's going to enter the draft now, but how much fun did you have watching him play?
Oh, I had a lot of fun. Honestly, he was the most fun to watch. I haven't had that much fun watching a linebacker at Fresno State since I watched myself. No, but he was great, man. Every week he showed up. You know, I think the other guys, 34 and Bailey, they played great as a unit, you know, and so he really took charge of that whole defense. You know, I loved watching that defense. He was exciting. He was a hitter, and he was always where he needed to be. So, you know, I'm excited to see what happens at the next level for him.
And the defense in general, these last two seasons, under Burt Watts this year and Orlando Steinauer last year, made big plays, forced a lot of turnovers, played a lot of energy, hard hitting, you know, pick sixes. It's been a lot of fun to watch this defense as a whole. So how enjoyable was it for you to see just the entire unit dominate at times?
Oh, very exciting, man. I think that's what Bulldog football, from what I remember, was all about. You know, from when I first started watching and first became a Bulldog with the likes of James Sanders and Richard Marshall and, you know, all those guys making plays, making big plays. You know, it was exciting. Garrett McIntyre, you know, it was exciting to see guys making plays on all levels, whether it was the D-line, the defensive backfield, you know, the linebackers running around. I think Bird has done a great job. You know, I definitely respect that whole coaching staff, Coach Williams and all the coaches, you know, that have been doing the job out there. I think they're doing a great job.
When they finally won in Boise, and it was for the championship, you know, there were a lot of videos. The news stations around here were showing the videos, the reactions from people who recorded it on their cell phones. I had one that was pretty good, too. I was loud and proud in Vegas watching it in my hotel room. Where were you when that moment happened, and did you record yourself as well, or did you just go nuts and all that?
I did have a video. I thought for sure somehow it might have got
picked up. Oh, it's with your son. It was with my son.
Yeah, my son. We were watching the game. We were super excited. You know, he was jumping around. We were all pretty excited, man. It was great. It was a great feeling. Probably the best feeling I've had watching Fresno State and not being a part of it. You know, definitely a great moment. You know, to beat Boise on that field, and not only to just do it, you know, not only to beat Boise, but for the championship, too. So I don't think there was a better way they could have went out on the end of the season this past year.
Now I remember your son was saying, let's go, and I think he hurt himself a little bit.
He did. He was saying, let's go, you know, stuff his toe on the table, I think, and did something. But, you know, he shook it off. You know, we were celebrating shortly after. Yeah,
do people do people still talk about that hit you put on Colt Brennan?
They definitely do. Anytime I'm in Fresno, anytime I see somebody from Fresno, you know, I met a guy in Sacramento a few weeks ago, you know, really dated me. He graduated from Fresno, I think, a couple years ago, and he was like, you know, me and my dad were watching that game. I remember I was in elementary school. I'm like, oh, what?
Elementary
you know,
school.
You know, he's old enough to be at the bar, but, you know, he remember watching that game when he was in elementary school, so that was exciting.
it's one of the best hits in Fresno State history. It is. It's just one of the best hits I've ever seen on a football field. So I guess since we love it so much, can you probably remember it like it was yesterday. So can you take me through the play and when you saw Colt Brennan scrambling to his left and trying to run for, I don't know, at the first down or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
What were you thinking?
No, I can definitely take you through the play.
Okay.
First of all, you know, we really did not want him to break that record. He had already tied the NCAA record on a touchdown pass earlier in the game. And so that was our main goal. We were trying to come back. I think we were down 2 touchdowns at the time. It was 3rd down and I believe 7 or 8 to go. And we're in a dime package. One thing I knew about this defense was that if he does scramble, I'm the first one that gets to come out of coverage and make a play on the quarterback. So, you know, all my other opportunities at, you know, hitting the quarterback, they always either throw it away or run out of bounds. You know, he understood how tight the game was getting and really wanted to make that play. So he scrambled. You know, I got a beat on him inside out, and he never really saw me coming. He was kind of focused on our cornerback. And when I started kind of lining up, I was like, I don't think this guy sees me. You know, last minute he tried to make a move inside, and I was already at full speed, you know, from about 15 yards deep. And all I can remember is when I made the hit, I knew we were going off the field. They got to kick it, you know. And so I kind of just jogged all the way around to the bench. And I didn't realize how hard the hit was until all of my teammates kept coming up to me. And I'm like, man, was it harder than my Idaho hit? And I started naming all these other plays. And they're like, no, it's better than all of those, you know. So it was kind of funny to me. You know, it definitely would have been a viral moment if the internet was like it was now.
I remember Pat Hill pumping his fist. But the aftermath, I'm sure you saw it on the scoreboard if they showed it. I mean, if I was the Hawaii scoreboard running the board up, I probably wouldn't have shown it. But how about the aftermath when he's on the ground for a while? Yeah, great hit. You're pumped up and, you know, they're having to punt. But then he's on the ground for a while. And were you a little concerned for his for his health for a little bit?
Well, initially, I didn't know. I went to the bench. Initially, I just, you know, when we get off the field 3rd down, we go meet with the coaches on the bench. So I had jogged all the way around. People were behind me. I wasn't even looking to see what was going on. I ran to the bench and sat down. The moment I sat down, I'm hearing behind me the Hawaii fans. I'm hearing every word known to mankind, every cuss word you can think of. Coming from behind me, and I'm just like, man, like, what's going on? And so I look and see everybody surrounded around, and then I'm like, oh, man, I need to go over here and show my support. And I was just, you know, I was just hoping it wasn't anything like his neck. You know, as soon as he got up, you know, I was relieved about that. But, you know, I was able to meet him a few years after that, and we broke bread. Really cool dude. And,
no hard feelings?
No hard feelings at all. Like, I shook his hand. I'm like, hey, Marcus Riley. He's like, man, I know who you are. That was a great play. You know, so he said it was a great play. He said he learned a life lesson that play. But definitely no hard feelings. He actually invited me out the next day. I was in Hawaii. He invited me out to go fishing the next day on the North Shore. So that was cool.
Oh, very cool. Former Bulldog linebacker Marcus Riley is our guest. With Pat Hill as your head coach, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of great stories behind the scenes. So do you have a good one that you can share with us, a behind-the-scenes story that can make us laugh a little bit?
Yeah, behind-the-scenes story. Let's see. Coach Hill, man, so many of them. You know, one that just kind of sticks out to me is just kind of indicative of who he was as a coach. And it really woke me up and kind of showed me who he was. Early on in my career, we were going to play Kansas State when they had Darren Sproles, and he was a Heisman candidate going into that game. We had just beat Washington. And the game was, I believe, 12 o'clock Eastern, so, 9 o'clock our time. Mm-hmm. And so we're waking up for pregame meal, and everybody's a little sluggish. It's early in the morning, and you can tell that everybody's a little tired, mm-hmm. right? And so, Coach Hill doesn't like the fact that everybody's tired getting ready for this game. So next thing you know, he yells a few explicatives and tells us we need to wake up, and throws his coffee at the wall, and it really kind of woke everybody up. And when he threw his coffee at the wall, I'm just like, ooh, okay. So that was a pretty funny moment, but, it ended up getting us really fired up, and we went up going out there and blowing those guys out.
You did. Yeah, you don't go all the way to Manhattan and just be sluggish, man. You got to take care of business.
Can't go to Manhattan and be, got to take care of business.
What are you doing now? I know you were in camp with the Packers, Rams, Bears. You played for the Las Vegas Locomotives, right, for the UFL. Won a couple mm-hmm. of championships. So what are you doing now?
Right now I'm running a linebacker school, man. So I'm trying all this knowledge that I've gained over the years through Pat Hill, Tom Mason, Coach Brown, all of those guys, even through my time in the NFL and through different friends and whatnot, I've gained a lot of knowledge. So I'm trying to give that back the best way I know how. And I've started a linebacker school. So I'm training kids all through Sacramento. I got some kids across the country, some kids on actually different continents, a couple guys in the UK that I'm doing some virtual training with, because football is blowing up worldwide, and I think there's definitely a lot of knowledge that could be given and could be taught. So that's my main gig right now, and doing different community projects and running flag football leagues and really just trying to give back and, live out these passions of giving back this recycled knowledge.
I'm sure Cameron Worrell will want you to put a 7-on-7 team together for passing down.
Oh, definitely, man. I just don't have time, man. I've teamed up with TMP, man. So, I help those guys.
Yeah.
I help out with the defense with TMP.
TMP and, Elite.
TMP Elite, man. So we've been helping out with those guys, and I'm honored to get an opportunity to, get a hold of some of the best prospects in Northern California through them and Coach T. But I just don't have the time to run a program, man. It's a lot of work,
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, maybe we'll see you up there. We'll be at City College of San Francisco, I think, February 9th. So maybe we'll see you up there with TMP Elite. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Are you related to Henry Ellard?
I am definitely related to Henry Ellard.
You guys
Henry
are cousins.
Ellard is, we are cousins. Henry Ellard is my mom's first cousin.
Okay. There you go.
So his mother is my grandma's sister.
So here comes the easiest question for you. I think the guy should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts on that, and how upset are you that he's not?
Definitely, man. It just sucks. It's all perception, and I understand why he's not. It kind of sucks, but he kind of got lost in the shuffle of, being on the L.A. Rams, and then when they were sent to St. Louis, right around the time he was at his, his highest in his career, they were sent to St. Louis, and a lot of the St. Louis fans don't know him. So now the Rams fans who are all in St. Louis, they can't really, pick it for him or, what's the word I'm looking for, campaign for him, because they're really used to the greatest show on turf. And so he missed out on that opportunity. I think when he was done playing, he was number three, definitely top three or four all time in receiving. I think a few guys like T.O. and some other guys have passed him by now, but he definitely has the numbers. For the only non-quarterback to be retired in Fresno State history, which I think is an amazing accomplishment in itself. He definitely deserves to be in the Pro Hall of Fame.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Last thought before we let you go. NFL playoffs, we're going to talk about throughout the whole show here. Specifically, since you play a little bit with the Rams, they host the Cowboys. I think that's probably going to be the best game of the weekend. How do you see this Cowboys-Rams matchup shaping up? How much fun will it be to watch these two running backs go up against these defenses?
Man, it's going to be great. It's going to be great to see, man. I'm pulling for the Rams. You know, it's tough to go against the Cowboys defense, though. You know, I think defense wins championships. They've been playing great. They're pretty stingy, you know. But I think the Rams, with a couple weeks rest, you know, hopefully they can hop back in there and do what they got to do, you know. And I'm also hoping just for the Rams for the sake of the Cowboys fans, you know. You get a little obnoxious, you know. But I got my hat on the L.A. Chargers, man. That's what I want to bring it home.
Well, there you go. All right. You want the Chargers to go ahead and take the whole thing?
I want the Chargers, man. I'm actually related to Anthony Lynn as well.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I mean, I wish we had more time. We don't. But what he did with that 4-7 defense, seven defensive backs against Lamar Jackson last week, that was some genius defense, man. I got to tell you that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they got it rolling out there. But I appreciate you guys letting me on, man.
You got it. Hey, Marcus, number 31 on the jersey, number one in our hearts. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you soon, man. Appreciate it. Happy New Year.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You got it. Marcus Riley joining us. Man, he's related to Anthony Lynn, too. And Henry Ellard Norton. He was a good football player. I wonder why he was a great football player. Holy cow. All right, we'll take a break. Coach Q will join us to preview Nevada, Fresno State. At the Mark tomorrow at 5. We are in the zone, live from the Fieldhouse on 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the zone, sponsored by Helena Agra Enterprises, LLC, the Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, as we talked about at the top of the hour, number 10, Nevada, is coming into the doghouse, the Mart. I know, Bulldogs. They're both doghouses. What the hell? All right. They're coming into the doghouse. Take on 12-3 Fresno State, 15-1 Nevada. Joining me is the color analyst for Fresno State men's basketball, your friend and mine, Mark Q. Jones, Coach Q. Hey, Coach, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it, man. I can't wait to talk X's and O's with you about this game.
GT, thanks for having me on your fine show, man. And we got a big one, brother. We got a big one. The Dogs have got to shoot like crazy tomorrow to be in this game.
Shoot like crazy. Nevada coming off that big blowout win over San Jose State. But before that, kind of surprised that they lost at New Mexico. But Fresno State, 3-0, they're the team in first place, tied with UNLV for the first place lead in the conference. Nevada a game behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see this thing as a shootout, something that could potentially come down to the wire?
Well, if Fresno State shoots the ball the way they did the second half against Utah State, definitely. If Nevada can get it into a half-court game and control the pace, you know, they could control the game. But I have a feeling it's going to be an exciting game because the guys at Nevada are thoroughbreds. They want to get up and down and run, too. They want to score some points. They want a boogie. So I think this is going to be a game that, for the 9,000 to 10,000 people that will be there, that is going to be really a lot of excitement. And if Fresno State can get the ball to drop from them from the three-point land, they're going to really put some pressure on Nevada. And then from there, who knows?
Well, they have to get this home court advantage first and foremost. You said 9,000 to 10,000. Boy, that would be really nice. I can't speak for what happened in the Colorado State game in regards to the crowd, but I saw a lot of fans disguised as seats. So how big is that sixth man going to be tomorrow night, 5 o'clock?
Well, it's huge. I mean, you haven't had a game. I was talking to Paul Leffler when they called me. You haven't had a game this big in the Save Mart Center in maybe 10 years. This team is ranked 10th in the country. They gave away a game at New Mexico. Your players aren't listening to you. You get into a little bit of the heated exchange during game, and you need to wake guys up, and they're going to lose, so let's just lose big. Let's just let it go. So now these guys will go to practice. I want to lose in January, Musselman's thinking, instead of in March. So if I can get their attention, re-engage them now. So that was kind of a smokescreen. They're a great team. And this is a big-time team, and they're coming to the Save Mart Center. And Musselman has taken that program for where no one would go to a game, no one would sponsor the team, to that place is sold out. So they're bringing that energy to Fresno State, okay? And we know that people in Fresno want to see a big-time game, and this is the game to come to. So it'll be people there, a lot of people there. And when they get them there, can we sustain that energy? Can we keep it going? This will be a big-time environment, a Saturday night game at 5 o'clock. Man, the tickets, you buy enough tickets, the tickets are priced right. Carter, you know what time it is, man. You'll be there. It's going to be exciting.
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see it. Just talk more about Caleb Martin, the freshman sensation over there, averaging, 18 points a game pretty much. His game and how much of a challenge he is for the Bulldog defense.
Hey, he's a pro. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 6'7", handle the ball, athletic. He's been there. He knows what to do. He's experienced. He is a major challenge. And his brother, his twin is as well. I mean, they're different players, but if he can get going, you know, size-wise, you don't have anybody with that athleticism that can handle what he brings. So I don't know how they're going to guard him. I don't know if it'll be with Deshaun Taylor. I don't know what will happen. You might want DT to guard him because DT can get into his head, and DT is going to compete, and he wants that challenge. So the other issue, George, is that Nevada's guys can guard, and they're all these long athletic guys that can move. And so the shot Braxton Huggins got up with the last-second shot against Utah State, against Nevada, that's a much more difficult shot because that guy can stay in front of Braxton, whoever Nevada puts out there. So it's going to be on the defensive end how they guard Fresno State shooters that really may be the issue. Like Nevada will miss shots. They'll take shots. They'll get into some transition. You're ready for that. But what the difference is, I've noticed more and more watching college basketball, is how well teams defend. When we played in Miami, they had guys that could get there right when the ball got there. So it was difficult to get past the Hurricane. When we played TCU, the athletes were so big and so strong that it was hard to get some separation from them. And that's where you see the difference with these elite teams that have experience, they have athleticism, they've got skill and defensive skill. They know how to play team defense and individual defense. That may be the challenge. How do the Dogs score? Well, I think you run like crazy. You get stuff in transition and you hit shooters in the shooter pocket in rhythm. Maybe get some threes in transition and some layups, and you force Nevada to play a style that they don't want to play, and that's how you get them. It's hard to get them in that situation, and I'm saying it in a real simple terms, but as you know, George, it's difficult when you got a lot of talent out there.
It's a whole different beast when a top 10 team comes to town. When you look at it from a coaching standpoint, how interested are you in seeing how Coach Hudson, you know, is diagramming plays or strategizing for this game and working on the matchups just to see how he kind of coordinates things offensively and defensively, the detailed aspects of the game, watching him coach and seeing how he handles substitutions against a top 10 team?
Yeah, I mean, you work with a guy, and you're real good friends with Adrian Wiggins, who knows how to adjust in the game and reach his player, and Coach Hudson has that as well. He can do on-the-fly adjustments. I like that. You know, they're going to go in with a strategy, but what if you get in there and something has to change? You get in foul trouble. You guys aren't shooting well. I like the way he's played it all year against really good teams and coaches. Jamie Dixon, coach of Miami. He's played against some guys who can really coach, and he will make some really nice adjustments in this game to try to give them a shot to win. And I noticed that when they played Utah State, that he kept adjusting and kept finding ways to keep Fresno State close, to be in it late, be close enough late to steal a game and win it and get out of there. And that says a lot about that. You know, there are a lot of coaches who have a system that just stick to the system no matter what happens. I've noticed that he will figure out different matchups, different ways to play teams. And so he's very hard to scout from that sense, because you know he's going to make some in-game adjustments. And I always thought the greatest coaches were able to do that, especially when you don't have great players. When you got Kobe, Michael Jordan, you got certain guys, maybe you don't have to adjust a whole lot because people are going to adjust to you. But if you just have good players and teams can do things to stop your main thing, you can go to your counterpunch, so to speak, and he does that well. He doesn't die on the hill. He keeps moving around.
How impressed? I think one of the keys of the season is how this team managed to keep on winning without Deshaun Taylor missing those four games. How impressed were you, especially with that window of time that the team did not have Taylor, were you with how they managed to still crank out the wins without him?
Yeah, I was very impressed, and I was surprised. Mm-hmm. Not that I didn't think the other guys could play. I have just been so impressed with Deshaun Taylor for the last few years that the thought of not having him on the floor gave me anxiety in terms of wins and losses. So it wasn't that I didn't have faith in the other guys, just my faith were a whole lot better with DT out there playing.
Yeah.
And I think that the intensity that he gives that team carried over when he was out. And that showed me a lot about Noah Blackwell, Deshaun's ability to really help Noah step up further and really encourage Noah. And Noah really showed up and showed out during that period for the Dogs. And I think he told me, and he told us on air, that Deshaun was very supportive of him and they root for each other. And that's the kind of team chemistry you have. And sometimes you don't have the greatest players in the world. You just have a great team. And this really may be a great team with some really good players, but they play as a team like champions.
Biggest home game since the Lopez twins and Stanford came to town?
Yeah. Would you not agree with that?
I would agree. I mean, yeah. I remember the place being packed. That's for sure.
Yeah, George, that's what you got coming in. Mm-hmm. And there will be people that maybe for the first time see this team play, and they'll look at warm-ups and you go, how is this team winning? Because they don't have the spot. You know what I mean? You're going to look out there, the team just doesn't look like your normal college team that has this kind of record. Mm-hmm. And you get out there and you watch them play and you watch the coaches make adjustments and the players are relaxed. The players know what they're supposed to do. They have that winning feel, and they may be like that team a couple of years ago with Marvell Harris and those guys that shot some people and find a way into the tournament. I mean, it could go backwards too. I mean, this is the first part of conference and, you know, guys could get hurt and all that kind of stuff, but they're playing so well as a team that it wouldn't surprise me that they get some sort of postseason action.
Think they can pull this off tomorrow?
Yeah. You know, if they, you know, what's giving me a whole lot of confidence is the second half of the Utah State game. Mm-hmm. Now, Utah State had a big eraser inside, and they played their guards really, you know, they had some bigger players, not as athletic as Nevada, but the Dogs were able to get shots up, and they were able to find their rhythm, and it was a tough game to kind of call, to kind of watch it, you know, that you're down the whole night. It's like a boxer, and, you know, and it's like the fighting, I think it was 1980s, Big John Tate was the heavyweight champion. He was fighting against Mike Weaver, and Mike Weaver hit him with a left hook in the 15th round and knocked him out cold, and Weaver was losing the whole fight. That's what the other night was like. Fresno State was getting beat. They couldn't figure it out, and they only led for 5-point-something seconds with a big knockout at the end. It was incredible. So that gives me a lot of faith that these guys are going into tomorrow with a lot of confidence. And Deshaun Taylor breathes confidence everywhere. So I got a lot of trust in that.
There you go. Coach Q, Paul Leffler with a call tomorrow. Hey, Coach, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, GT. Take care, brother.
All right, you too. All right. That's it. It's a great way to close it out. But we're going to kick off the 5 o'clock hour with former Bulldog quarterback Billy Volek. That's on the flip side of the Sports Center, live from the Fieldhouse in the Zone, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
It's time to get in the zone.
In the zone.
Oh, my God! The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending, exciting, thrilling finish in the history of college football.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
5 seconds left in the game. You believe it not?
The Zone is sponsored by Helena Agro Enterprises, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture.
Swung on, hit the deep center field. Bernie Williams goes back and in.
It's Friday. It's the Fieldhouse, and you're in the zone. Here are your hosts, George Takata.
You talking to me?
And Nick Anderson.
You talking to me?
It's time to get in the zone.
What are you worried about? I'm in the zone, man.
All right, everybody. It's hour number two of the zone. We are live at the Fieldhouse in Fresno on Copper. I am George Takata, representing Reedley College, where we motivate and inspire students to succeed. Of course, 16 years as a sportscaster for CBS 47. Love the TV career. Love it. And I love being back on the radio talking sports. All right. We had Marcus Riley and Coach Q hour number one, and we're going to continue to talk NFL playoffs with one of my all-time favorite interviews. Just absolutely love the guy. He's a former Clovis West Golden Eagle, former Fresno State Bulldog quarterback, and 12-year NFL vet Billy Volek joining me now live from beautiful sunny San Diego. Hey, Billy, how are you, man?
Oh, George, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. I really appreciate the time. It's great to have you on the air. Great to hear your voice again. We talked briefly last week about how excited you were for Philip Rivers and the Chargers to get back in the playoffs and go to Baltimore, and they pulled out the win. Now they go to New England. What are your thoughts on the matchup coming up this weekend?
You know, I'll tell you what. I like the Chargers in this matchup. Philip Rivers, he's one of the favorite teammates I've had in many, many years of football, and just a great guy. Without him, I don't think this organization is where they are. And you know what? He's 0-6 or 0-7 against Tom Brady. And I think this is a year where they're going to go out there and break the curse. I think it's a little snow. And he's healthy. Last time we went out there in the AFC Championship game, you know, the guy had no ACL. And he went out there and played and tried to get a victory. But I really like the Chargers. And I'm pulling for the Chargers. You know, they're my team.
Of course you are. I mean, they paid you very well.
Yes, they did.
Well, can you talk a little bit more about Philip Rivers as a teammate and what he was like in the quarterback room and behind the scenes?
Oh, just a great guy all around. He was the coach in the meetings. Everybody looked up to him. You know, him and I, we'd always compete at everything we did. If we lost a game on Sunday, on Wednesday, when it came work day, we'd get there at 5 o'clock. If we lost another game, we'd get there at 4:30 in the morning. Just a constant guy who's going to grind. He's not going to get outworked by anybody. Great leader. We were 4-8 a few years ago, and Denver was 8-4. They had to lose 4 to get in the playoffs, and we had to win 4 to get in the playoffs. And he gave a speech, you know, after our third quarter. We were, you know, 4-8. And he gave a speech, and all 53 guys in the room, we were on board. We were going to run through a brick wall to try to get a win, and we won 4 straight and made the playoffs. And I think it's because of his leadership, it's his character on and off the field. Like, I don't know if you saw a special on NFL Primetime the other day, but they had him trash talking, and that's him. The guy doesn't cuss, but he gets you so irritated. You know, he's just an all around great guy, and I'm really pulling for him. I think he deserves it. He's had a great career, and I'd love to see him get that trophy.
Now, we're 2 days away from an 11-year anniversary of you replacing him, an injured Philip Rivers, against the Colts in Indianapolis, and a fourth-quarter comeback to beat the defending champs in the playoffs. How well do you remember that game? Is that kind of like yesterday?
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 11 years. I'm sure getting old.
Sorry to remind you. Shut up, man. You're never going to catch up to me, fortunately for you. What do you remember most about that game?
What I remember most is getting in the huddle, and the guys were jumping up and down, and they were so excited. And, they're about 2 or 3 feet from me, and the old, it was RCA dome, whatever it was. It was so loud. I was yelling the plays of the guys in the huddle, and they could not hear me. It was just, the experience was awesome. LT got hurt. Darren Sproles came in. Michael Turner was playing. Legadu Nane from, Boise State. Just a bunch of guys who, just fought to get into the league. And we had an opportunity to go out there and play and perform. And, we got the win, and the celebration was great. Everyone in the locker room's going nuts. And everyone kind of knew, like, hey, we got to go to New England. And they were 16-17-0 at the time. But it was one of the highlights of my NFL career for sure.
You snuck it in from a yard out. Did you get pushed in by your line, or was that all you?
Shoot. Yeah, they pushed me in. They did everything. I mean, I don't know how I got across the goal line. And I just remember Antonio Gates standing above me like, man, get your butt up. Let's go. we got the score, and the defense stopped Peyton. And, that's one of the highlights of my career. And when I talk to Peyton, I tell him, hey, who scored the last rushing title in your stadium? It was me. It wasn't you. It was me. So I got that going for me, George. So things are pretty good.
Well, there you go. You are one of 8 quarterbacks in NFL history to have back-to-back 400-plus yard games. How much does that mean to you now that you have had time to look back on your career?
It was a great accomplishment. I had a lot of great guys around me, and out in Nashville with just some great teammates, and is quite a compliment for the guys that are around me. And looking back, I think I was 1 of 4, but now you got all these quarterbacks coming up, and the guy from Kansas City just throwing for a ton of yards every week, and Brady and all those guys. So I look back at the career that I had, and I wish I would have played more, but I'm healthy, and when I got a chance to go out and perform and play, I feel like I did pretty good.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Unfortunately, we lost both of those games. It was a shootout, but it was like 7-on-7. I mean, it was just, we were throwing the ball all around the park, and the best was against Oakland, because I had a bunch of family from Sacramento and Fresno come over and watch a game, and we play against Kerry Collins. I think he threw for like 380. I threw for 400 plus, and it was just probably a very fun game for the fans to watch.
Yeah, it was one of I was happy and sad. You played great, and the Raiders won, so I guess I it was a win-win situation for me in that case. Yeah, I guess so. Billy Villick is our guest now. For those fans who don't know, or listeners, I started in TV in 1997. I think Billy, you were a senior, I think. No, you weren't. You were just a sophomore.
It was my first year starting in 97 as a sophomore.
So we kind of grew up together in this. Your first year as a starter at Fresno State, my first year as a sportscaster. Then we get to 1999. You throw 30 touchdowns, only 3 picks. Bulldogs go back to a bowl game for the first time in who knows how long. How much fun was that your senior year to finally climb the mountain and have some success as a Bulldog?
It was absolutely fantastic, and I think that was kind of like the turn of the program. Dilfer did such a fantastic job with Sweeney. They went to USC and won in 93, and then Sweeney recruited me. Pat Hill came in and kind of took over a team that was struggling a little bit, and he did a great job on, getting the guys to buy in. And, we had them 97, 98, 99. I think 99 was guys were buying in, and just to go out there and I remember going 6-0 at home, which I take great pride in, because we never lost on our home field, and playing in front of the Fresno fans and the doghouse was just so awesome. But to go out there and win a WAC championship and, play against guys like LT and so many great athletes, and it was fantastic. And then all of a sudden, you got Carr, who came in and did fantastic, and then his little brother comes in and does great, and then you got Tedford there now. So It's awesome to be a Fresno State alum. It's awesome to, you know, be affiliated with guys like a Sweeney or a Pat Hill or Jeff Tedford or, you know, just so many great names coming out of that program. And I love the university. I love the people in Fresno. Down here it gets great. It's sunny and 60, 70 almost every day. And
But
Fresno is, it is. I mean, it's going to rain tonight and people are going to freak out. You know, they're going to like, what's going on around here? But, you know, Fresno, it's close to my heart. It's a great place. I miss it. I love the fans. And it's great to see Tedford have the success that he's having.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what a season. I was talking to Marcus Riley in the first hour about it. They accomplished as much as they possibly could, except for maybe going to a New Year's Bowl, you know, playing in the Fiesta Bowl. Just came up short with that, I guess. But would you see them finally be Boise State on the blue turf and do it in a championship game and then to, you know, go to Vegas and beat a Pac-12 school? They beat the you-know-what out of UCLA early in the year. How much fun was it for you watching this Fresno State team this year? And what did you think of Marcus McMarion as a quarterback?
I think Marcus did a great job. he did a great job just taking care of the ball, taking the offense, and just do it. He's a stud. I really like the guy. Extremely happy with Tedford. I was pulling for him. I was so mad at Tedford. He left in 97 and went to Oregon to go be the OC there. And doggone, I called him like, really? You're leaving me? But to see him come back to Fresno and do what he's done, to see, you know, Scotty Thompson coaching there, my old tight end, old roommate, it's awesome. And I only think that they're going to continue to get better and build that program. I honestly couldn't be happier. I talked to Tedford a few times every year and just wish him luck. And I love what he's doing. Every time he comes down to San Diego, you know, he's kicking the Aztecs' butt. So I absolutely appreciate him.
Fresno State's at USC August 31st. Can we get some like a semi-commitment from you to be at that one at the Coliseum?
Oh, shoot. I'd love to be there and watch the Bulldogs play. Maybe we can have a flashback of 97. You know, that was the year when Dilfer went out there and won, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so I'd love to see. I mean, we went to we played UCLA in 99, and we also went to Oregon State right after that game. And we took the lead in the middle of the fourth quarter, and I thought we had it, and they came back to win. But to go to the Rose Bowl, it's so much history in that stadium. And you know, then to go to the Coliseum and play USC next year, it's going to be great. I think Tedford just has such a gift. What he did at Cal with Rodgers and Bowler and Marshawn Lynch and all those guys, and what he's doing now with Fresno and getting the community back involved. I believe that they're going to go out there and they're going to be very competitive and they'll probably pull it off. Maybe they're going to be the new Boise State when Boise State went on their run of going undefeated and in Oklahoma, I think it was in the Cotton Bowl. So, I'm excited for this next year.
Billy Volek is our guest. What is it about Jeff Tedford and his offensive genius? What is it that you're impressed with him the most? The way he's been able to constantly adapt year after year. What is it about the mind of Jeff Tedford offensively that you like the most? Is it his creativity or what is it?
I love how he wins games. You know, coming from Fresno State, I ran a wing tee. We threw the ball maybe six or seven times every Friday. If we threw it nine times, I was icing down my arm because I was pretty stinking sore. But, you know, I went to Fresno State not knowing much about, you know, passing scheme. And from my redshirt freshman year to my freshman year to my sophomore year when I started for him, he just taught me the game. He taught me the X's and O's. And I think he teaches players what their responsibility is. You know, don't look at the big picture. Just do your job. And that's what he taught me. You know, I can't worry about the wide receiver and the route he's going to run. I can't worry about the left guard if he's going to pick up, you know, the inside zone dog blitz or stuff like that. He just, you know, do your job. And obviously wherever he's gone, he's had success. And, you know, I think in a few years that he's been there, he's done a great job. And to watch Fresno State on TV and see the red wave back, I mean, it's awesome.
Now, there were a lot of videos that came out, social media or whatever, Twitter, people showing the video of the last play in the championship game against Boise State when Ronnie Rivers ran it in for the game-winning touchdown in overtime to win the Mountain West title. Where were you when that happened?
You know, I had a few friends over, and I was jumping up and down. and we were just going nuts. We were ecstatic, and, you know, Legadu Nade, we played together with the Chargers, and he went to Boise State, and I see him every once in a while. We, you know, we live 500 yards from each other, pretty close in the neighborhood that we live in, and I was texting him, blowing him up, and he was giving me the roll eyes, which is all that stuff. So I was high-fiving him, and he picked up the cat and high-fived the cat. You know, I was just so fired up for the guys. You know, they, to go back to Boise and win, I mean, it was awesome.
Is it one of those things where you're texting teammates or former teammates and calling some former Fresno State teammates of yours saying, oh, yeah, finally, or one of those things where you're just so hyped you want to talk to as many people as possible?
I'm talking to anybody who will listen, George. You know how that is, right?
Yeah, especially when the hair gets a little more gray. A couple more questions, and then we'll let you go. What are you doing now? I know you're enjoying retirement. You're living down in sunny San Diego, but what are you doing now? Spend a lot of time with your kids and all that good stuff, right?
Yeah, I got a daughter in college out in Virginia, and then my boys are, you know, a junior and a sophomore. And I'm being a dad and, you know, flipping some property here and there down here, investing in some other stuff, self-storage units and all that stuff. But it's kind of like my time just to be a dad and to watch my kids develop, to work out with them and still think that I got it because I can throw pretty hard to a 17, 18-year-old, you know. But just hanging out with the family and enjoying the time down here, and, you know, obviously missing you guys. But, you know, it's I pinch myself sometimes. Life is pretty stinking awesome, and except for my Chargers leaving San Diego and going up to L.A., that still bugs me, but life is great, man.
Well, Phillip still lives in San Diego, right? So can't you just go get a soda with him? He probably doesn't drink, right? So you better get a soda with him in the off-season?
Oh, he'll have a beer or two, but
good.
You know, the stinking guy, he commutes every day up to L.A. He got this little Escalade with a big old screen TV and two lazy boys in it, but the guy's committed, obviously, to his family, and but, you know, it's just love the guy. Wish him luck this weekend. I, you know, from the national championship to watching Clemson do what they did to Alabama to the NFL playoffs, I love this time of year. You know, it's cold, I mean, it's 55, 60 down here, so that's cold. I had to put on a sweater on the other day.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, pretty rough.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a Raider fan, man, you got me pulling for the Chargers this weekend. I don't believe you, but you did. I mean, you talk about how great Phillip Rivers is, and obviously I know you think the world of Antonio Gates. Man, I think you've got me flipping the switch on pulling for New England. I think I'm going to root for the Chargers instead.
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, you got Lorenzo Neal, who was a Chargers player, and Phillip, one of the best guys ever. I even texted him, buddy, you need to run for president. You know, really, because there's no dirt on him. They couldn't find anything. He's going to go. He's going to do what is right for the people.
Yeah.
He's just a strong, strong individual person. But, you know, Antonio Gates, what, such a funny guy. I'm pulling for those guys. Obviously, his family was very generous to me. And even though they left all of us down here, we're still pulling for him. It's kind of mixed emotions.
Yeah.
But I think majority of the true fans down here, we're going to pull for our Chargers, go out to New England, and Tom Brady, obviously, is one of the best careers of any pro quarterback. I think it's our time. I think with that defense, Melvin Ingram in the backfield, you know, doing his thing, and, man, I'm fired up for him. I hope they go out there and do it. And I think the Colts are going to go to Kansas City and do some good things there. The crazy thing, George, is what if the Colts win?
Mm-hmm.
Chargers win.
You got Stubb Hub
who's going to host the game. Are they going to bring that game to the Coliseum? Are they going to bring it to the Rose Bowl? You can't put 26,000 people in a stadium for an AFC Championship game.
Well, that's the NFL's problem.
It is, but wouldn't that be crazy to see them go to the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum to go play and abandon the Stubb Hub?
I think what they need to do, if both teams win this week, than what both teams would host, right? So if the Colts win. So then you would have to, I think you take the Coliseum and you put the one end zone with the Chargers logo in it, the other end zone with the Rams logo in it, and then you just maybe at the 50-yard line you put two half logos on it and call it what it is. Because you cannot, you're right, you cannot play AFC Championship game in front of 28,000 people in a soccer stadium. It's just, that'd be a logistic nightmare. You are correct. There's no way in hell that
I should. I sure hope it happens. I'd love to see the NFL do, deal with this problem. And shoot, maybe they bring it down to the Murph. How awesome would that be?
Hey,
bring it back down to San Diego.
Even better. Well, we have to go to San Diego and play. Oh, talking about eating crow. Last thought.
Right.
I love asking quarterbacks this question. I need you to kind of dig deep. Go back to your memory banks. Any kind of play in the huddle, as descriptive as you can be, as long as it can be, something like a pass play or something. Do you have anything that jogs your memory when you were playing in the NFL about a play that you called that we don't understand what it is, but you can kind of describe what it is?
Oh, yeah. Wide shift to double right, gone right, 525, H-post swing check, 44 counter.
What in the world is that?
Wide shift to double right is a formation. We can throw a motion in there, too. H toy, something like that. Gone right is a protection, five-man protection. Uh-huh. 525, the outside receivers are going to do 18-yard comeback. The tight end got a drag. You got LT on the H post, and dial it in. It's a play that's been very successful, and it got LT to the Hall of Fame.
Sounds like you need to be coaching. I'm sure you don't want to do that. You're coaching your kids, so...
I would love to coach. I mean, I'm sitting forward in my chair right now. I'm leaning. I got that forward lean. I'm ready to go. Let's go. We got a great weekend coming up here.
Clovis West got a football coaching. They got their head coaching position wide open here at Clovis West, Billy. Wide open.
Well, George, put in the word. Let's go. Get you back on TV on the sideline. Let's do it.
I'll be the water boy. How's that?
That's all right. Just roll it. Cool out. Throw the ball a little bit more. Okay. I got you.
That's good. Just air it out. Got great athletes. Hey, thank you so much for the time, Bill. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the games. I guess go Chargers. And you've always been one of my favorites. I really do appreciate you taking the time. Happy New Year to you, man.
All right. You too, buddy. Hey, thanks for having me on, and go Chargers.
Of course. Thank you very much. Billy Volek joining me. I can't even start to say that play again. It just turned out to be a running play to LT. I mean, all that for that? That's probably from like 2 yards out. All right, got to take a break. And we're going to talk a little hockey, a little Fresno Monsters. Wyatt Babb, the voice of the Monsters, is going to join us a little bit. Talk about the Monster season so far. It's kind of winding down a little bit, so you got some limited opportunities to catch Fresno's only hockey team. And actually, Fresno State has a hockey team, don't they? Do they not? Fresno State does not have a hockey team. So this is the only hockey team in town. So there you go. We'll talk Fresno Monsters hockey with Wyatt Babb in just a minute. This is The Zone, live from the Fieldhouse in Fresno, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in The Zone, sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, welcome back to The Fieldhouse. It's getting a little crowded in here. Fieldhouse, Fresno, I'm Copper, George Takata here in The Zone. Great having Billy Volek on. Brings back a lot of great memories. He is a WAC champion. And now we switch from the gridiron to the ice. Hey, the Fresno Monsters having a great season. They're 20-12-1. They have two consecutive games at Sound Arena starting tonight. The Monsters playing at 7:30 tonight. Tomorrow also at 7:30. Fresno State has an exhibition team called the Ice Dogs, but the Monsters are consistently on the ice in downtown Fresno. And joining me now, live here from the Fieldhouse, to talk about the team, Wyatt Babb. He's the play-by-play guy for the Monsters. Wyatt, great having you here. How you doing?
Hey, I appreciate it. Nice to meet you, George.
Oh, pleasure to meet you, too. So you have six home games left. You know, I admit, I'm not the biggest hockey guy, so tell us a little bit about the Monsters and the season they're having.
Yeah, so the Monsters are having a great season so far. They're out here in the WSHL. That's the league they are in, the Western States Hockey League. Mm-hmm. And they're in a very tough division, the Western Division. They're doing really good. They've had a really good home record, struggling a little bit on the road, mm-hmm. trying to find their road legs a little bit. But that's expected with these younger guys and you know, traveling all that time.
Who are some of the big players on the team, like leading scorer or things?
Leading scorer for the team is number 23, Peter Filipov. He's from Russia. Very good player, very shifty, dynamic with the puck on his stick. Then we got a guy, Dustin Truex. He's an American man, number 81 on the squad. They both play on the same line, Filipov and Truex. And then number 17, we just got in a trade, Velasquez. He's from Chicago, Illinois, and same as Filipov, very shifty. Both those two guys together with Truex, they're all three on the same line, on that top line. When they're going, the whole team's going. So those are some guys you really want to look out for.
What's the average age of a player on the team?
They can range up from about 16, and then 21 is when they age out. Mm-hmm. Most of these guys are sitting around 18, 19. And if a guy is 16, 17 in the league, he's probably going to start heading upwards in his hockey career.
So this is a developmental league, obviously.
Yes, very developmental. Probably one of the most premier developmental leagues here in the United States.
Love the logo. The Monsters logo is really great.
Yeah.
I love. What's the mascot too? Right.
Yes. Yes. They have a mascot named Deke. He's just
Deke,
the monster.
That's right.
Yeah.
Deke the monster. He should meet Wally the Green Monster from the Red Sox. Just talk about, this is your first year doing this, and you're from the Valley.
Yes.
So how does Wyatt Babb become so, falls in love with a sport that's mainly Canadian?
Well, you know, it's kind of weird. My dad had a work friend, and his family was actually from Minnesota. And, you know, when my dad was at work or something, they would take us in and they'd watch us. And they were very big hockey fans. And just from being around them all the time, we would start watching hockey. And then they started taking, you know, me and my dad to hockey games at when the Falcons were still in town.
Yeah.
And it just started becoming a love affair. And, you know, I grabbed an NHL team, Colorado Avalanche, and just kind of ran with it.
Now, what's the next step for these players from here when they get promoted, called up, moved up, or what's the next step for them?
So they have a few options. From the WSHL, what you can do, the next league up is the NHL, the NAHL. Now, when you get to the NAHL, it's a lot harder for Europeans to get in there because only two or three can really get in there. So there's a backlog. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these guys have a little bit of trouble. But say you're, you know, Canadian, United States, you get a little bit more opportunity, go up to the NHL, then you can choose to go the college route, mm-hmm. or go to a league called the USHL, which a lot of players come out of that directly from the NHL draft.
Well, there you go. So we could see some of these guys in the National Hockey League someday.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of guys who, I don't think there's been somebody who's been in the NHL yet that came from this
happen.
League. But I can see it happening. I can definitely see it happening. With the talent that I see out there on a nightly basis, sometimes it's very impressive what these guys can do.
Now, you said there's a guy from Russia on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are a couple of European guys. What's it like to meet these young men in the different cultures and things like that, things you've learned from them?
Oh, I've learned a lot. You know, we got a guy from Sweden. We actually just had a guy from Great Britain, which is not traditionally a hockey place whatsoever.
Wow.
And he just got called up to the Great Britain U-20 national team. So he will be leaving the Monsters to go play over there. But meeting all these different guys, it's so unique seeing the way that they view things over here and their different perspectives on stuff. And they just have a different way of playing hockey than traditional Canadian or American players. They don't like to hit as much. They're more about the skill part of the game.
And to have a team like that in Selland Arena, because I remember you talked about the Falcons. I covered the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
And in their heyday, when they were winning games, they were fun to watch. I mean, they had their specific group of people that would come watch. But Selland Arena is a great place for hockey. It's a cozy place that gets really loud. So
yeah.
What are the thoughts on Selland and that atmosphere for the guys?
You know what? I had my expectations about Selland before the season started, and it just completely shattered everything. I mean, the way Selland is, I just feel like it was meant for hockey. It's just a great building. These kids get to come out here, and in a league where a lot of other teams don't get this opportunity, these kids get a loud arena, and it pumps them up. It gives them a lot more energy, a lot more juice to go out there and have a good game. And it's just a great arena. It's a great place to have down here in Fresno.
Sounds like the Monsters are playoff bound with their 2012-1 record.
For sure, for sure. There's one team ahead of them right now in the standings, the Long Beach Bombers, and that's kind of their Achilles heel right now. But they faced each other last year in the playoffs, couldn't get past them. This year, I think they're poised to make a good playoff run. And, you know, in this league, you're constantly getting new players all the time. So.
And I see on your card there, tonight's Ag Night at, at Selwyn. Now, tell us a little bit about the promotions before we go.
So we got a lot of different promotions here, and tonight is My Job Depends on Ag Night. And it's just it's a good way. I believe the Monsters are wearing a special old Falcons tribute jersey, the John Deere green and yellow.
I got to get one.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of people out there tonight. We've had so many promotions this season. Star Wars Night is coming up with special Star Wars jerseys.
Sweet.
And then tomorrow night will be Fresno Falcons Appreciation Night, where if you bring any Falcons gear, you get them free. So, I mean, it's a great deal. It's a great value for anybody to come down to Selwyn Arena.
I have an old Takata Fresno Falcons number 47 jersey.
Get in free?
Get in free and wear it? Well, it sounds like the Monsters are doing great. You have the call on Black Dog Hockey tonight at 7:30?
Yes.
Website?
It's a streaming service that you can pay for individual games or just pay for a month or 3 months, I believe, is the other option. And you a lot of scouts use it to figure out if they want to, you know, get these players on their squads. But a lot of other family members and stuff like that will tune in and watch. And me and my partner, Nick McGee, we try to do our best to make it as legit of a broadcast as we can. Mm-hmm. So tune in and listen to me and Nick.
There you go. It's the Monsters hosting the Long...
Ontario Avalanche.
Ontario Avalanche. There you go. Tonight at 7:30, Wyatt Babb with the call, 7:30 p.m. Selwyn Arena. Go out there. It's Ag Night, or you can listen to the game streaming on Black Dog Hockey. Hey, appreciate it, man.
Hey, thank you for having
me on.
We'll
get another update here when the team gets to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, I'll let you know.
All right, sounds good. Take a break. Mike Oz, Yahoo Sports, going to talk baseball cards, all that great stuff, spring training right around the corner. We're in the zone on this fabulous Friday at the Fieldhouse. 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the zone. Sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
Fieldhouse starting to fill up. Food and drink. Come and get it. George Takata here from Reedley College, where we motivate and inspire students to succeed. Now joined by Mike Oz, Mike Osageda. Did I say your last name right?
You did, man. Good job.
I did. So I get paid the big bucks, man. Yahoo Sports covers baseball and has a great segment, old baseball cards. You just have to watch the segment and how much fun it is. Mike goes to spring training and talks to a legend, a Hall of Famer, a current player, manager, doesn't matter. Somebody affiliated with the game, and they open old packs of baseball cards, and they have a good time. Where did you come up with the – first of all, Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too.
And how did you come up with the segment? You just had a whole bunch of old stuff in the closet, right?
In my garage, actually. I was literally in my garage.
Uh-huh.
I told my wife, Tanya – shout out, Tanya, if you're listening.
Hey, Tanya.
That I would clean the garage before we went to spring training.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was I just had a bunch of boxes of old cards. When I was a kid, I collected cards with my grandmother. Typical story for anybody my age, it was like, all these cards are going to pay for your college one day, they're going to pay for your house, you know. Like, and, of course, as we all know, the cards are worthless.
Yeah, because they were mass-produced in the 80s and 90s. Yeah.
So my grandma died probably like 15 years ago, and anytime anyone in my family moves, mm-hmm. I always end up with like, oh, here's some more of grandma's baseball cards that she stashed away. So they always just, you know, give them to me because mm-hmm. I have a ton of them. And so I'm like, what do I do with the baseball cards? And some of them are fun. They're fun to open. Like, you and I could sit here and open a pack and have fun.
Right.
But, I mean, that also, like, I'm like, there's something more I can do. And I was cleaning the garage, just putting them away, and then it hit me. I was like, I should open them up with baseball players because that would be infinitely more fun.
Yeah.
And so we went to spring training quite literally, like, 3 days later. I had a box of cards in my hand, and I was like, let's just try it. Like, we didn't really have it worked out what we were going to do. We just sort of freestyled the first one, mm-hmm. and it was with Rajay Davis, and then we did a few more, and that was kind of it. Like, we rolled them out, and I didn't really think it was going to become a thing. And
it's a big thing.
We're about to start our fourth season, so fourth season starts in 2 weeks. I can give you the exclusive scoop if you want. Season premiere.
We'll take it.
Season premiere, Don Mattingly.
Don Mattingly.
Don Mattingly.
Donnie Baseball. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yankee legend. Should be in the Hall of Fame.
A lot of fun. He was very fun. You can watch the episodes too. I think if you watch them, there's always a point where you can see the person really get into it. Mm-hmm. Like they're sort of like, why am I opening baseball cards? And then the clicks, you know, like the childhood thing, or the, you know, they see the person they remember well, or reminds them of a story or a memory, and then it all happens.
Now you're in your fourth year. Yeah. So I'm assuming that this segment has caught on with the baseball folks, right? Now people see you and go, oh, let's open some cards.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who, fans and otherwise, come up to me. I had an ex-player who now is works in an exec type of office, mm-hmm. type thing the other day at the winter meetings. And was like, hey, let's open some baseball cards. I love your show, blah, blah, blah. And so I get a lot of people come up to me and want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, like me, I'm about ready to do it.
Yeah. I walked in here, and George was like, did you bring baseball cards? And I said, no, I did not. And I went back out to my car to get some baseball cards, because I quite literally always try to have baseball cards on me just because.
There you go. And if you have any old unwrapped or old wrapped, still wrapped, with the gum inside, packs of 80s and 90s cards that you don't know what to do with, somehow get him to Mike. I don't know
call
where
me.
We're. Yeah, call Mike. Call me. Tweet Mike. What's your Twitter handle?
At Mike Oz.
At Mike Oz, OZ. Yeah. And give him the cards.
I get a ton of people who hit me up, though, wanting to know what to do with their old baseball cards.
Right.
And
right.
It's never people that have open packs, though. It's always like they have the, I have the, you know, Andrew Jones rookie or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, they're. I'm sorry.
I have about 12 Jose Canseco rookies, and they're not worth a damn thing.
Yeah, sorry. You know, sorry. I do too. I mean, I have the one. You know, the rated rookie 86 Donruss.
Yeah, that's what I got.
And you know, yeah. Sorry, they're not worth anything.
Is there any card from that era, 80s, 90s? I mean, there's the Billy Ripken, you know, with the bat knob and the F face.
Yeah.
Is there any
Griffey's
card
the only one that's? I mean, and a good Griffey. You know, because now, I mean, it's different than when we were kids, man. Like, now you got to get them graded.
Yeah.
And how much it's worth is dependent on the condition. Mm-hmm. And
is it centered?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are there ink smears?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, a good Griffey, I think you could still get, like, $50 for. Yeah, but that's it. I mean, even, like, what I had a bunch of and I was pretty happy was the Barry Bonds 87 Fleer. And, like, because those were a little less overproduced than, like, the Canseco rookie. But even that, I mean, is maybe $10-$12.
I know. It's sad. Yeah. And now, with the card, you don't dare do anything with the cards you open now, especially the National Treasures, because I collect cards. If you knew that, I'm a card collecting junkie now. But they have autographs on them. There's pieces of the jersey. They're numbered to one of ones. They're numbered to 5, 10, 25. I mean, those are worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and it's like a, I mean, it's high stakes now, like, for real, right? Like, it's...
you buy a case for $5,000. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And you want those one of ones.
Yes,
you
know, I have a couple.
It's sort of that. It's like that luxury type thing, as opposed to, you know, we can open a pack of cards and we're gonna get, oh, there's, you know, Francisco Lindor, or there's whoever, and yeah, great, that's fine. But if you don't get like an autographed one of one with a piece of his jersey in it,
right,
then it's not really worth.
Do you
much.
Open the new stuff?
I open some stuff. So we have Topps Archives here.
We
in front
do.
Of us. And I like these because they actually have old players in them.
Yeah.
So you'll get like an Alex Bregman, and then you'll get like a Mark McGwire. You know.
Right.
So it also kind of works for our segment. Like we did it. I went to what I know because we did it with Alex Bregman, and he pulled a Mark McGwire. you know, like so. This is kind of good for that because there's current guys and there's old guys.
Yep.
I like the you probably know better than me. The what are the old ones? The Topps does. They look old.
The retro ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. From back in the day?
No.
Oh,
they make them now, but they look old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know exactly.
Allen and Ginter.
Yeah, that's it. Yes,
I like
the Allen and Ginters. Yep. Those
I like
are good.
Those. I like archives. I like all that special stuff more than like the current cards.
And then they have the optics. Those are kind of like 3D-ish.
Yeah.
So you've had this segment now. You're going into year four. I've seen a lot of them. Your first one was Rajay Davis. Dusty Baker was a lot of fun.
Dusty
I think
Baker's
you had
A-Rod.
Who knows how many more? How many total? I'm sure you know.
We're coming up on 100. So we're going to have episode 100, which will fall right around opening day. Where I think we're at like 80, 87, 88 right now.
Favorite one of the 90, whatever, 80, 90 something you've done?
I think Pedro Martinez.
Pedro
just
Martin.
Because he was so great, you know. Like he's just such a nice and enjoyable guy, and then he pulled great cards, and it worked out really well. He had great stories.
Teammates, probably. Pulled some teammates.
Pulled his brother.
Yeah, there you go, Ramon. You know,
yeah, that's good. And then probably Randy Johnson, just because we all think of Randy Johnson as being such kind of a mean guy, mm-hmm. you know. And even when I walked in to do the segment, I carry all my cards in this big kind of case, mm-hmm. and he's like, "We're not going to open all those cards, are we?" And I was like, "Oh, man, this is going to be rough." And I was like, "No, you just get to pick whatever you want." And we do it. And he was so into it. He even stuck around to watch it, because we filmed one right after. He stuck around mm-hmm. to watch us film the next one with Luis Gonzalez. And, like, you know, he's over there commenting and stuff. And he was really into it. So I like when somebody does something to, like, you know, go against what you think of them, mm-hmm. you know. And I like, this is early A-Rod. This is when A-Rod first started doing TV. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, you watch A-Rod. You're like, man, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
You know.
He's very good on TV.
And we've learned that now. Yeah. So I like it when you can kind of see a different part of somebody.
Well, there you go. All right, we got to hit the break. And then we come back. I'm going to open this pack. And we'll talk more about your segment. And we'll ask you.
We haven't talked about Bryce Harper yet, man.
Well, we'll get to that, man. We got about 10 more minutes. All right, we have Mike Oz here. Mike Ozegueda, Fresno native.
No.
No?
No.
How long have you lived here?
15 years, though.
Representing close Fresno. Enough, close yeah, enough. He's Fresno's Mike Oz, Yahoo Sports. Yeah. Great job covering baseball. We're going to open up some cards, talk more about the segment, talk about Bryce Harper and the Dodgers getting Russell Martin today. We'll do all that when we come back on The Zone, 940 ESPN, live from the Field House, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in The Zone, sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, The Field House, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, back here with Mike Oz, Yahoo Sports. Creator of that Taco Madness you have going on.
Taco Truck Throwdown?
Taco Truck Throwdowns. This is your guy right here.
Fresh Yes Fest,
Tioga Sequoia. Great job with all that. We'll have you on again to talk about a preview of the upcoming year. We got something we're in the works or no?
We just announced the Fresh Yes Fest today.
Okay.
Actually, the date is March 23rd.
March 23rd at the Chuck Chancey Park?
No, Tioga Square.
Tioga Square, across the street from Chuck Chancey Park. Okay, great. So we're talking about your baseball card segment, old baseball cards. Don Mattingly will kick things off. And so let's just open up this pack of 2018 archives, which has old guys in it. And we'll see what they have. And these are kind of like the old designs, too. Like, I got a Rafael Devers.
Give that to your Red Sox buddy over there.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Here's your Rafael Devers.
I also got that one. I got the same one.
Yeah, two Rafael Devers. That's about worth a quarter. AJ Pollock.
See, I got like Duke Snider, too. So
let's see my old school. Oh, I got Derek Jeter.
There you go.
Nolan Arenado, not bad. And I got a Shohei Ohtani rookie.
Oh, look at you.
That's got to be worth about $2.
Hey, I got the kid from the Sandlot.
Oh, you got a Sandlot card?
I'm keeping that.
Damn. I got Ryan Braun and Kyle Seager, but you got the hit. That's what they call them. Hit.
I got Gleyber Torres.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got those. I got, if you want a good transition, I got Bryce
Harper. Oh, there's Bryce Harper. That's an old school 1981 design.
Yeah, so I like these because they're old designs, current players, and then random. You know, the players.
Any of these numbers? I guess not.
Let me see who you got.
I got Ohtani, Jeter, AJ Pollock, Lucas Giolito.
Giolito.
Nolan Arenado, great player. Ryan Braun.
No Fresno people? No.
No, Fresno people. All right, so you have some thoughts on Bryce Harper. You don't think he's going to be a Dodger. What's your prediction?
So my prediction in December was watch the Nationals.
Okay.
And I'm feeling pretty good about it now. Mm-hmm. I think, one, I thought Nationals because Scott Boras knows he can get the money from them. Mm-hmm. You know, he's negotiated so many big contracts with the Nationals, very close with them. We know he offered them. We know they offered him $300 million already. Like, I just don't see how
they turn that down.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't take it, but he didn't turn it down either, right?
You're right. Like, it's like, I'll come back to you.
Yeah. I'll see if someone else matches it. And then if not, and we've heard since then they're willing to go more. To me, it just seems like you have the match of the agent and the team. Mm-hmm. They're willing to spend the money. At the end of it, I feel like that's where he's going to end up. I mean, someone else could come in and spend the money. The Phillies are a team that have said they want to spend, quote-unquote, stupid money this offseason, and they haven't done it yet. You know, signing Dallas Keuchel for $60 million is not going to fulfill that. Mm-hmm. So when you say that, then you have to do it or else your fans are going to get mad.
Right.
So I think Machado to the Phillies. I think Harper to the Nats. I think, surprisingly, the Yankees might not get anybody.